now going to be giving you the reading. I'm reading from the New International Version, but if you're reading from a different version, it won't matter. It won't detract, I pray, from what God's trying to tell us today. So James chapter 3, verses 1 to 12. In my Bible, it's headed Taming the Tongue. Not many of you should presume to be teachers, my brothers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. If anyone is never at fault in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to keep his whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of his life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and creatures of the sea are being tamed and have been tamed by man. But no man can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. Wow. As I say, I've got bitter experience of opening my mouth and putting my foot in it. I won't go into details, but it's so easy to do. And it's interesting that the anthropologists tell us that it is the tongue which makes man stand apart from the animals, because we are able to communicate very complex details with great accuracy. And as I say, the anthropologist says that that's one thing which sets us apart from many animals, in fact, all animals. They have their own ways of communicating. Sometimes they're in ways which we have only recently begun to understand. I remember learning, was I a 20-year-old, about the bee dance, how bumblebees dance to show where the nearest good source of nectar is from if they've just discovered some. We don't understand that communication equally well. I suspect that bees don't understand what we say. But I pray that shortly God will enable me to communicate with you properly without opening my mouth and putting my foot in it, and that we will together learn something new from this passage in the book of James. Be careful what you say. What a title. And what a warning for all of us, I think. At the outset, can I sort of emphasise the fact that although James is talking about speaking, I believe what he has to say in the letter, what God has to say in the letter as well, of course, applies to the written word as well, particularly the instant written word which we have access to these days. The Bible was written a long time before social media, to put it mildly. But the lessons we can learn from this passage related to speaking should also apply to that email that we are sending perhaps in temper or with a knee-jerk reaction, or that letter that we're writing. The trouble with computers is it enables you to do so much so quickly. And I have fallen into that trap before of saying the wrong thing, whether it be in the written word or the spoken word, and only realising later the impact it has had on other people. One tip which I often share is that if you receive an email or communication which upsets you, don't respond immediately. By all means, draft a reply, but sleep on it, if possible. Sleep on it. Read it afresh in the morning. Are you happy with what you've said? Or could it be subject to either misinterpretation or is it conveying too negative meaning? And that is something which I've done over the last, 15 years plus, and it stood me in good stead, I believe, because so often my immediate reaction would have caused a huge amount of upset. As I say, it applies to the written word as well. 1631, yes, even before my time, two men, Robert Barker and Martin Lucas, they had one of the best guaranteed jobs in this country. They were the king's printers. I was going to say it's a license to print money. I'm not sure whether we had notes in those days or not. But they had the exclusive right to publish Bibles, which would be sent all over the country to the churches, bearing in mind that only the rich were really able to read, the poor couldn't. And they managed to release a Bible with a printing error in it. Unfortunately for them, the printing error was in the commandments, in particular the seventh commandment, which instead of saying, "Thou shalt not commit adultery," proudly pronounced, "Thou shalt commit adultery." Embarrassing or what? All the books, as soon as it was realised, all of the Bibles were brought back and the vast majority were destroyed. I think there's two or three known to be in existence and they are worth a fortune. But what happened to them, I was told or read somewhere years ago that they were burnt at the stake and that the Bibles were the fuel. But they weren't. In a way, it was worse than that. They were sacked as the king's printers. They were fined £300, which is the equivalent of £100,000 today. And the entire print run was recalled and most destroyed. They were ruined. They went from being in a high position to being bankrupt, effectively. All because of one missing word. Come on now to 1976. Now, if I ask you what was 1976 famous for, what would you say? Hot summer. That's interesting. I was expecting someone to say that's when Bethany opened. And this, if you know me, you'll know that football has no interest to me whatsoever. I was a huge disappointment to my father, who played it, not professionally, but he played in goal for Newport. And I never was interested in football, but I happen to know, because I heard it on the news this morning, that 1976 was the one year when Portsmouth won the Football Cup. So the fact that that stayed in my memory is quite exceptional. But you're right, it was the year of the big drought, as well as the year when Bethany, this building, opened. Well, in 1976, I won't name the person concerned, but a young preacher stood on the platform behind me, in the pulpit there, to preach. He was nervous. He wasn't very experienced. I think he'd just come back from university or teacher training college. He was nervous. He was hot. He was mopping his brow. And what he meant to say was that he was sweating buckets. What he actually said was that he was sweaty buttocks. A slip of the tongue. We all make that innocent slip of the tongue. Speakers, teachers, whatever, in conversation with someone, we will make a mistake. I've heard someone recently at Bethany miss out the word "not" in one sentence, which could have completely changed what he was speaking about, rather like the printing error in the Bible. Take care with your tongue. I remember reading that apparently John F. Kennedy had an unusual habit in speaking. I will try and replicate it. Before saying any sentence or phrase, he would stop and say it to himself first. It meant there were gaps in what he was saying. I can't speak like that. I have to keep going. And perhaps that's part of my problem, that my mouth runs away with me. There's an old phrase which the Americans, they do like to, I hope there's no one American here, but they often like to claim things for their own. And this is a phrase which is attributed to Lincoln or Mark Twain. There's different versions of it, but it is better to be silent and thought a fool than to speak and prove it. Well, believe it or not, that's actually in Proverbs chapter 17, verse 28. It's a sort of a slight change of what it says there. The wise man knows to stay quiet. But let's look at the tongue as James introduces it there. As I say, he warns teachers, quite rightly too, that teachers, preachers, we have a duty. I can remember years ago when I worked in the law, I was asked, as we were all asked, what subject would you like teaching on? And I said a particular subject, an obscure part of the law which, how can I put it, many lawyers ignored and fell foul of. Procedural law, it was. And I asked for teaching on that. Well, I got my wish, in a way, because they phoned round and found out who knows anything about this subject. And my boss said, oh, Roger knows a bit about that. I ended up having to do all the research and presenting a talk to the nation of prosecutors, as it were, on that particular subject. And there's nothing quite like being asked to prepare to talk on a subject for making you learn it well, because I like to be able to answer questions at the end, and that includes in here in Bethany, if anyone's got any questions about what I ask, what I speak. So it's not just knowledge, it's conveying it, it's speech. And I love the pictures which James uses in his letter. The small rudder steering a huge ship. Yeah, no, I know that if you look at the dimensions of the rudder on the Titanic, it seems big. But compared to the size of the ship, it's actually quite small. It's that thing at the back behind the propellers. It's small. And a slight deviation, a slight turn of the wheel, has a big effect on the ship. And so this is the first thing that I want to do to talk about. The tongue is small, but it's powerful. Not everyone that James wrote this letter to would have been aware of ships or seen ships out of water, perhaps. And so he also talks about a horse. I'm not a horse rider. I have ridden a horse, I think, once in my life. But I know the bit is, what, about that long? Fits in a horse's mouth, and you can steer it. You can control it. You can stop it by pulling on the bit. Something small has a huge effect. But he also goes on to say that the tongue has another thing. It is small, but it is dangerous. He likens it to a small spark which can burn down an entire forest. It's still something which I have to confess, I'm not sure what the right term is. Do I marvel at it? That one person's small mistake, or sometimes it's deliberate, can burn down acres and acres, square miles of land. And you have beautiful countryside destroyed by a fire. It only takes one spark to get a fire going. In fact, James says it corrupts the whole person. And I think that's right. I think that in the same way that the rudder steers the ship, as well as affecting other people, it affects the person speaking it. I'll come on to that in a bit more detail shortly. In Matthew 12, in various places, Jesus warns us. I'll quote here, but I say to you, for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. The Christian philosopher Ian McInnes says a phrase I've written down here. Yes. A carefully edited written passage says little about the author. But a few words spoken spontaneously can reveal the true heart and soul of the speaker. Wow, that's quite something, isn't it? Small words have a huge effect. In the 1960s, a brother and sister were singing in America, attaining quite a high level of fame. And the sister wasn't the singer, she was the drummer, if my memory is correct. And someone who was reviewing their act referred to him, Richard, and her as Richard's chubby sister. That girl was Karen Carpenter. Nowadays, people perhaps look at that and say that's what started her anorexia nervosa, her eating disorder, that desire to look thin, which ended up killing her. I think she was 32. Tragically young, a fantastic voice. If ever you hear the Carpenters, Karen actually came up, they lowered the her singing range, as it were, and found that she had this wonderful voice, which still produces magic today. A life tragically cut short. Was it entirely that critic's comment, chubby sister? That's what she blamed it on. That's what her brother blamed it on. But perhaps we will never know. Perhaps something else in her life would have done it if that hadn't been said. But everyone who speaks has that responsibility to be careful what they say. I was an annoying child. I admit it. And I can remember I was probably aged between 8 and 11. I used to ask my dad questions after questions after questions. I was inquisitive. I'm the sort of inquisitive child who took a clock apart to find out how it worked. Did I get it back together again? No. But I used to ask my dad question after question. And I can imagine that my dad was probably tired out through his work. He was a very hard worker at work, often working 3 shifts in a row to pay the mortgage. And he would silence me with one word. If I asked a daft question, he would snap at me, and I use that phrase deliberately, the word think. And I soon learnt not to ask questions, but to think it out myself. Whether that's for good or bad, I don't know. I think in the long term it was good, but at the time I felt humiliated, cut short. Think, in particular, think before sleep, before speaking. So we have James emphasising the fact that we need to control our tongues. It's small but powerful, as I said. A great forest fire can be set off by a small spark. The tongue, though small, can boast great things. But we see that in verse 9, there's something else about the tongue as well. And that is that it reveals the character of the person, I believe. Verse 9, with the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers, can a fig tree bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. That again is something which Jesus spoke about back in Matthew. The fact that a bramble bush produce apples, and so forth. I'm paraphrasing very badly. What does our tongue say about us? I pray constantly that God will control my tongue because of the mistakes I've made in the past. I have said hurtful things, not mean to. I recently sent an email to a person and I was very startled by the reply back. It wasn't, I thought, a contentious email. It was just an email dealing with fairly inconsequential things, and thanking the person for the way that she would point out things that I needed to do. I wanted to convey to her that I was grateful for the fact that she noticed when things needed to do and would mention them. What I didn't know is that she was going through a divorce at the time, and her husband was moaning at her for moaning at him constantly. And my email was received as a criticism. And I couldn't understand it. I didn't know the background. And so we should all be careful what we say, what we write, and how we communicate. Because it speaks volumes about us. I thank the Lord that as I grow older, I am able to learn from my mistakes. I would also encourage others to learn from my mistakes as well. I used to say that about my driving. I consider myself very fortunate. For 40 years, I worked in the criminal law, and that includes motoring. And I have seen how many drivers make mistakes. I've probably seen, I was going to say, every way a driver can get it wrong. The trouble is, one can always create new faults on that. And I'm not a perfect driver. I'm not the best driver in my family. My wife is. But I'm better because I have seen the mistakes that others have made. And I would urge you, take heed of my mistakes. When I've opened my mouth and said the wrong thing, yes, criticise me for it. Bring it to my attention. But also learn from it. Because it is so easy for that slip of the tongue to slip out. So easy for that spark to go out. That spark can then set off a huge forest fire. I think it's amazing that what James says, and indeed what Jesus says, is that we all can't control our tongues to one degree or another. It's a human failing. The tongue, incidentally, is the only muscle in the body which is only joined at one end. All other muscles in the body connect two bones with the use of tendons and so forth and make things move. But the tongue is only joined at the back of the throat. And yet, it is has such a big effect on our lives and the lives of those around us. What we say perhaps presents the true self. The Bible tells us that the eye is the window of the soul. Well, I want you to regard the mouth as the loudspeaker of the heart. That sometimes can display the true person inside. That is not to depress you, please. We can all fight. We can all learn. We can all learn to control our tongue better. As I say, one advantage in growing old is I've got a lot of wrong mistakes in the past that I've learned from. We can control our tongue, or we should try to control our tongue. James's letter is one which instructs new Christians. It may have been mentioned before by a previous speaker, but it's possibly the first written New Testament book, and it's probably written by the brother of Jesus. There are some experts who disagree with that, but it all seems to tie in. And I think it's quite important that he chooses the tongue as being one of the large chunks of this very short letter, which he says to the church, you need to learn how to control. And what a lesson for us all. What a lesson for us all. Think of that small ship, with that big ship, with the comparatively small rudder. It changes the direction of the ship. And I believe that if we can curtail our knee-jerk reaction, our words which we would regret, or that email that we would send out, that hurtful thing that we would do because someone's hurt us, If we can control that, I think it makes us a better Christian. It gets us closer to God. It's not just affecting those around us, it is affecting ourselves, what we say and how we say it. And my prayer is that we will all learn to control our tongues more, that we will all think about the effect, think about the way it will be received. There will be times when we will get it wrong. There will be times when I will open my mouth and put my foot in it. It will happen, I know. But I pray that it will happen less and less in the future as I come closer and closer to our Lord.